Excellent. Thanks, guys. So we are have started last week a new series, What The? And last week we looked at the topic, being terrified of Jesus. And we were looking through people's reactions to Jesus through the Gospel of Mark. Well, today we have a new topic, and it's up on the screen in a moment. What the hell? What the hell? What the hell? What the hell? And we are going to talk about hell because that's one of the topics that I think causes us to go, what the? It's really interesting. I remember, and I'm getting to that sort of age now where you say, you know, I remember back when, you know, the topic of hell was a big topic in church circles, and it was talked about often. And the, you know, the whole Billy Graham thing, if you were to die tonight, do you know where you're going to go, was a very prominent thing that was in the evangelical and charismatic circles that I moved in. You may not have, and you may not be old enough to remember that, and that's okay. But when you think about that today, it somehow feels a bit anachronistic. It somehow feels like that's a bit of a strange way to be talking about things. And so that's why you go, what the? What is this? Is hell real? Is hell just? Is hell, what is hell? I mean, there's a whole bunch of questions that we might have about it. And so hopefully, well, I mean, even if you don't have them about that, some other people will have it about them, and hopefully we can unpack and address some of those today. I think one of the things is that when we think about hell is that oftentimes the conceptions that we have are formed much more by culture than by the Bible. And so you might have, you know, you go, and if you've gone to Europe and you've gone through, you know, art galleries and places like that, you'll see these amazing pictures of heaven and hell. If you've been to the Vatican and you see the Sistine Chapel, you don't even need to go. You can just go online and look up the amazing Michelangelo fresco that's on the back wall of the Sistine Chapel, where basically the top half is heaven and the bottom half is hell. And in the sort of that medieval concept of this world, you had this world, and then you either went into the next world and either went up to heaven or down to hell. And life was fragile and short and often very tough, and people were constantly aware of their own mortality and frailty. And unlike today, people hoped that they wouldn't suffer a quick death because they were concerned that they wouldn't have time to get their spiritual house in order before they died. Whereas today, it's totally different, isn't it? You know, we would hope for a quick death so it's not painful and long and lingering. That would be the way that most people would hope that they would then pass away in this life. And there's no sense of fear or anything really often about hell. I mean, it's oftentimes, you know, yeah, well, you're going to go and have the party down in hell. You go to the boring heaven or you have the party down in hell. And these are some of the folk understandings of hell that might be going around that you might be exposed to, and you might vacillate between them, you know. Because often attached with that sort of folk understanding of hell is the sort of folk understanding of heaven. You know, when you're like, oh yeah, they're up in the, you know, in the big football pitch in the sky playing football, or in the big knitting group up in the sky, or whatever. There's this view of sort of heaven and hell as the sort of wishful thinking views of those things. So what we're going to do today, in a few moments' time, is we're actually going to go and look at some passages where Jesus talked about hell. Because he's the one we follow, and he's the one that we should take our lead from, and he's the one that we can learn from. But before we get to that, I just want us to reflect again on something that's in our society. And that is that by and large, most of us, the idea of sin is not a big issue in our culture anymore. All right? You know, as long as you're not hurting anybody else, it doesn't really matter what you're going to do. The sort of consequences of things and that there's right and wrong things to do. Now, there are some of those things, but there's not very many of those things in our society today. And most of us would think that that doesn't actually apply to us. You know, well, yeah, there might be some sin or whatever, but I'm a good person. And one of the things that we need to think about first is whether that's accurate, that's an accurate understanding of the actual situation. Because the scriptures would tend to suggest that what we tend to do is we tend to underestimate our own sinfulness. If you've been reading through the daily reading plan that we have on our app and in the foyer, we'll have started reading the book of Jeremiah. And in the book of Jeremiah, in the first two chapters, Jeremiah is basically bringing a prophecy of judgment, but he lists a lot of different things that the leaders and the religious leaders and the people are doing wrong. And then, shockingly, this is what they say in response to all of that. They've been, you know, they've got the blood of innocent people on their hands, all these sort of terrible things. And then God, through Jeremiah, is saying to these, yet in spite of this, you say, I am innocent. He's not angry with me. And there's this idea, I think, that often exists, unconsciously adopted, that, oh yeah, I'm okay, I'm innocent. There's nothing in my life for God to be angry at. Hell isn't a thing that I need to worry about because I'm a pretty decent sort of person. But here in the surrounding passages, Jeremiah had just said to the people, clearly they weren't innocent. Clearly there were things going on that were ungodly and that were wrong, and that God's judgment was coming. The other thing too is that it's not just, oftentimes we think about sins as sins of commission, the things that I am doing wrong. And yet there's a parable that Jesus talked about, which is the parable of the sheep and the goats. And in that case, it was basically people were shocked and surprised that they'd A, either done good things, or A, or B, not done good things and therefore done bad things. And therefore were liable for some judgment. And so when we think about ourselves, what we need to be careful of is overestimating our own righteousness. We tend to do that, and that's, I think, by and large a good thing, that we tend to have a positive view of life rather than an overly morose and negative view of life. But there is this tendency to minimise our own sin, even as we might observe the sin in other people. We're really good at observing the sin in other people, but we're not often as good at seeing it in our own lives. And then we also tend to underestimate the seriousness of sin. And so here is where we get to some teaching of Jesus. And in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, Jesus said, if your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. And it's repeated over in Mark chapter 9. Where he says the same thing. If your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life maimed than with two hands to go into hell where the fire never goes out. And if your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life crippled than to have two feet and to be thrown into hell. And so here we see in these shocking passages where Jesus is talking about cutting off physical things, but he's not saying that our hands and our feet and our eyes cause us to sin, because we know elsewhere, he says actually it's in the heart that does that. But we need to be reminded, I think, of the insidious nature of sin. And we need to think clearly about the reality of free will and choice in this world. As much as we would like to think about it, The world that exists is a world where choices matter. And it's a world where some choices matter more than others. The choice of the football team that you follow is pretty important. It's life-defining in this world, right? But the choice of clothes you wear this morning aren't. But if you choose to walk near the edge of an unstable cliff and it gives away and you fall down to injury or death, that's a bit different to choosing to walk down the path in the park, isn't it? You see, you can make similar sorts of choices, but they can be vastly different outcomes. That's just the nature of this world that we live in. It's not just that every choice is equal. No, some choices are actually more important than other choices. And so the choices about who we follow and who we believe in and who we trust in are deeply significant choices. Some choices may not be immediate outcomes, but they have vastly different outcomes. At the moment, I'm working on planning a holiday for our family next year, and we're having to book some airline tickets. And the sort of airline tickets I book will lead to vastly different outcomes, right? You know, if it so happens that I book tickets for me and Chris to get to Paris and tickets for Annabelle to get to Istanbul, although we might leave from the same airport and for the first over half the journey be travelling in the same direction, we'll actually end up at vastly different places at the end. Different choices have different consequences, and different choices can end up in vastly different places, even though they don't appear to be the same to start with. And sometimes you have to make really tough choices. And some are really more important than others. Like, I need to cut my toenails sometime soon, because I haven't done it in a while and they're getting a bit longer. But I just went to the skin doctor during the week, and unfortunately I got a clean bill of health. But if he said, actually there's some skin cancer on your skin that needs to be cut off, choosing to get that cut off is a similar sort of choice, but a vastly more important choice, isn't it? It's a bit like, you know, if you're being diagnosed as a diabetic, now the choice of whether you, how much sugar you eat and when you eat it is now a vastly more important choice than if you're not. And Jesus is saying that some things that cause you to sin need to be dealt with and cut out and thrown away. It's that serious. Now, if you have some, you know, we go to great lengths to get rid of cancer cells from our bodies when they're diagnosed, because we know of the ultimate destruction that they will reap in our physical bodies. But yet often we underestimate the fact that sin is the same, some inner attitudes and actions of sin are the same way, and we need to deal with them just as severely. Have you ever seen photos of, often it's Italian cities, where the rubbish collectors have gone on strike? And it only takes a few days for there just to be mountains of rubbish everywhere. And it would be exactly the same in Melbourne, right? There's no difference. The quantity of rubbish that big cities produce in them, without any place to get rid of them, they would just be overwhelmed. Not many of us have had the unfortunate trauma of being the victim of a crime and it going through the courts, and then the courts handing down a judgment on the perpetrator. You see, and it's in moments like this that our laissez-faire, she'll be right, you know, everyone's pretty good, you don't have to worry about stuff, is sort of flipped on its head. And the deep-seated, God-given desire for justice emerges. And particularly when some person who's, you know, killed some kids in a motor accident and they get 1 or 2 years prison, and people say, that's not fair. That's not just. How can that be a just outcome for all of the actual things that they've done wrong? And so when we think about these things, when we think about the serious nature of some things, when we think about the fact that some choices are different to other choices and they have serious outcomes, when we think about the innate deep desire for justice that is often awakened when we experience the injustice, it's in that framework that we then come to see Jesus and what he teaches about hell. Now, there are three words that are mainly used in the Bible about for hell. One is, that are sometimes translated hell. The first one is Sheol, and that appears mainly in the Old Testament. And it basically means the place of the dead. And basically their understanding was, through most of the Old Testament, when you died, you went to the place of the dead, whether you're good or bad. And the New Testament version of that word is Hades. It's the place of the dead. And then there's another word that's the one that's most often translated hell in the New Testament, and that's Gehenna. And that is a word that refers to, there was a valley outside of Jerusalem that was called the Hinnom Valley, and that became in Greek Gehenna, the Valley of Hinnom. And they used to do terrible things there. They used to sacrifice kids to the local gods there. And so that place became accursed, and it became the image, if you like, of the place where the wicked were judged. And so we're going to do a quick tour through some of the places where Jesus talks about things, talks about hell. And we've already read some of them in Mark chapter 9 and in Matthew chapter 5, where it talks about things being thrown into hell, a place where bad things, where sinful things are destroyed. A bit, if you like, it's a bit like the waste disposal part of the universe. It's the place where, in a hospital setting, where they go and destroy all of the cancer cells that have been cut out of people and dispose of the infected tissue or whatever else it is. All of that stuff needs to go there, but we don't want to go there with it. And so there's this idea that Gehenna is the place where there is fire that goes on, this fire that destroys evil stuff. It also talks in other places about darkness. So, for example, in Matthew 22, is the parable of the wedding banquet, and about those that were suitably dressed and they weren't, and unsuitably dressed. And it says in verse 13, then the king told the attendants, tie him hand and foot and throw him into the outer darkness where there'll be weeping and gnashing of teeth. In Matthew 25, the parable of the servants that were given bags of gold and where they had to do things with them. And when the master returns, there was judgments over them. And one of them who had hid the gold in the ground rather than actually doing anything with them. It says this, and throw the worthless servant outside into the darkness where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So one of the images that Jesus uses in parables of judgment is people being thrown into the darkness. And in the very next passage, where it's the parable of the sheep and the goats, about those that, you know, when I was in prison, you visited me. When I was sick, when I was hungry, you you fed me when I was naked, you clothed me, etc. And the people say, I don't remember doing that. And the king says, well, whenever you did it to one of the least of these, you did it to me. And then the parable goes on to those who didn't do those things to the least of these. And it's when you don't do these things to the small people, it's like you don't do them to God. And it says this, depart from me, you who are cursed, into the eternal fire prepared for the devil and his angels. And so we've got three sort of images here about hell and judgment, if you like. The first one is that the image of fire. And the second one is the image of darkness. And so we need to understand that these have got, in some ways, got to be metaphorical, because you don't have dark fire, do you? And then the third one is about being separated from the king, or separated from God, the departing. So Jesus uses these images to talk about what will happen in the when people experience the final judgment, is that there is a departing, there is a sense of things being consumed in fire, and there is a darkness, and there's a weeping and gnashing of teeth. Christians disagree about what the nature of, well, how people exist in hell. The Dante Inferno version of it is the eternal conscious torment. That people get thrown into hell and they're there forever, perpetually alive, perpetually suffering, perpetually being eaten by worms or whatever, it's terrible. And the Bible does talk about the fire that never goes out. Other people, other Christians say, well, there is a judgment, but then God gives people second, third, and fourth, and essentially infinite chances till they recognize that God is good and that they should follow God anyway, and so everybody ends up being saved. And there is a middle or a third understanding of hell, which is that hell is real, hell exists forever, the fire doesn't go out, but that people are destroyed. So they don't suffer forever, but they do suffer and they do end up being destroyed. I personally think that's probably the most consistent with some of the scriptures. It's my understanding. That it is terrible, but it isn't eternal suffering. It's like if you have the incinerator, the fire never goes out, but when you put a particular piece of paper in it, it gets burnt up and ceases to exist. But the fire is still there. And so, when we think about hell, and we think, and people say, I can't see how a good and loving God could assign someone to an eternity of suffering. That seems unjust. That seems disproportionate. There are two things I would say. One is that I don't think it is that God is disproportionate and unjust in the punishments that come out. But also, I don't think God's a Tiggy Touchwood sort of God. Tiggy Touchwood free kick sort of God. Because Jesus is always on about what's on in your heart. What's going on, not so much the external stuff, but in your heart is their anger, in your heart is their lust. In your heart, are you following God or rejecting God? It's at the deep points, it's at the significant points, it's at the big life decisions that have big consequences. And so we need to take seriously the teaching of Jesus, that there is judgment, and that there is punishment, and that there is a destruction of evil, which when we are the experiences of it, the ones who incur it in our lives, we are really glad for that. We want that evil. We want that injustice. We want that violence. We want that abuse. We want that to be ultimately destroyed and done away with forever. And that's good. We're reflecting the heart of God in that moment. But we can't have it both ways. We've also then got to recognize that that sometimes there is evil in us, and that needs to be dealt with too. And so hell is real, hell is judgment, hell is separation from God. There are different ways that Christians understand that. And I encourage you to think about that and try and wrestle through the scriptures and have a read of them yourselves to try and figure out which one is best for you. I think all Christians, Christians agree that there is a judgment, that there is an accounting. And all of us, when we think about it, think, yes, that's good. And yes, that's right. But the interesting thing is, in the life of Jesus, when he interacted with people, he very rarely led with hell. He led with, let me heal you. He led with, follow me. The kingdom of God is available. And then when he's talking to his disciples about dealing with the sin in their lives, that's when he brings it out. Or when he's talking to the religious leaders who should be knowing better, that's when he brings it out. He does get to people and say, sin is serious, you need to stop it. But he very rarely leads with the hell bit. Not that it's not important, but he very rarely does. And I think we should take a leaf out of his book when we attempt to talk to people and share a good news about Jesus. And finally, I think we need to keep hell in proportion. And so often it's been we've got this life and then the future, it's either heaven and hell, and they're vaguely the same size. We think of it as like it's a binary choice. It's sort of heaven and there's hell, right? And there's either a big heaven and there's a big hell. But I think that's an incorrect understanding of the scriptures. And again, if you've been reading through our weekly Bible reading, we've just finished the book of Isaiah. And at the end of the book of Isaiah, and we went through Isaiah, I think, last year, and we did some preaching through it. Isaiah is in some ways spookily like a condensed version of the whole Bible. Like the 66 books in the Bible, there's 66 chapters in Isaiah. There's 39 books in the Old Testament. There's 39 chapters in the first section of Isaiah. There's 27 books in the New Testament. There's 27 chapters in the second and third sections of Isaiah. And the end of Isaiah in chapter 66, it talks about the future. And it talks about God gathering people from all over the world to become into Jerusalem, to become part of God's people. And it talks about a new heaven and a new earth. You see, the genuine understanding of the end things, the last days, the end of all things, is not that this world disappears and we either go to heaven or hell, but that this world is renewed and reconnected with heaven. And so you have heaven and earth, and then off to the side, you have God's divine garbage dump in an incinerator, evil disposal unit. There's no equivalence between heaven and hell. Heaven is God's realm, and earth is going to be reconnected with heaven, and that's the dominant thing. And there is a place where evil is ultimately dealt with. But that's a small part of the future reality. A necessary part, a serious part, a terrible part, but a small part. And so we need to be understanding that, A, that our assessment of our own sinfulness is often faulty. That there are deep and serious consequences for sin. But God is, and there is justice and judgment, which is good. God is proportional and fair and wise. But more than that, God doesn't want anybody to suffer that eternal loss. He paid a great price in becoming one of us and dying on a cross to mean that that doesn't have to happen for anybody. And we can grasp that invitation to be with God now and forever. We can offer that invitation to the people around us to be with God now and forever. We can tell people there is forgiveness and mercy for our own failings and the intractable things in our lives that we struggle with and don't seem to overcome. There is power of God for that. And yes, when there is injustice in the world, God will deal with that and set things right, and heaven and earth will be joined together, and that'll be fantastic. And we can know the surety of being part of that by trusting in Jesus. And then when we work through all of those things, yes, there is a place called hell. We don't really understand what it's like, but it's God's ultimate destination for evil and the destruction of it. So I hope that frames it in a way that's helpful to you. If I've raised more questions than I've answered, please come and ask me. Certainly happy to talk to you about it. We probably can't cover it all adequately in the time we had available. But let's be aware of it. Let's lead in our lives with the greatness of Jesus. And trust him to convict us and others of the things that we need to cut out of our lives for our own eternal blessing. Let's pray.